All good. So guys, I think we're going to kick off. Took us a little bit of time to get into the room. It must have been a very good session, the last one. I didn't see the title. Anybody in for the last one? Yeah? Good session?
It was good.
Feedback form overrun. Nope, sorry. Didn't say that. Anyway, so thank you for coming to this session. This is actually a session that combines the talents, hopefully, of both myself, James Crawshaw, and Roger. And I'm a data center technical specialist at Microsoft, so covering Windows Server System Center virtualization. You may have seen me over at the data center stand in the middle on the show floor or next door. I was just doing another session, which was my first ever Tech Ed session at my first ever Tech Ed, which was interesting. I'd like to introduce Roger. Go for it, Roger.
Yep. I'm a SQL Server technology specialist, and many of you are familiar to me. You should have seen me on the desk too. And today, the topic mainly is what is in Windows 2012 when it comes to the SQL Server perspective. So we are going to see what are the complementing technologies of Windows 2012 that is going to be more useful for the database. That is where, as James said, that we are going to see a combined skill set
That's right, and look, from my perspective, SQL's always been one of those workloads that I've always loved to have on Windows Server, because it is a big, beefy workload. It can use a lot of resources, and there's loads of good stuff in Server 2012 that we can start leveraging, and whether it's the hypervisor layer or just natively within Windows Server. SQL 2012, of course, Roger will tell me and tell you that there's loads of great features in there as well. So without further ado, I shall pop over to Roger to take us through the first section.
Yep, we are going to start with SMB for SQL Server. That's a server messaging block, which is a new SMB version for Windows 2012 being introduced. So what does it bring from the SQL perspective? We are going to look at that in detail, and we are going to see how SMB new version is going to change the way that you store the database files with the moving forward with Windows 2012. Then what is called the enhancements in terms of SMB to support workload like SQL Server. What are the enhancements that has been done from SQL side, from Windows side, what you are going to see. Those are the major topics. Then we'll be moving on to the scale-out file server. When you store the databases on the SMB, we need to think of a failover as well as scaling out aspects of it. So what Windows 2012 brings from the scale-out perspective. Then we'll be looking at other enhancements that Hyper-V brings in general for SQL Server. So the major one is the first one, and then we are going to touch base briefly on the second and third, and I'm sure that there are many more apart from this, so we'll discuss that offline if you need. Okay, to start with, I just wanted to give you a picture of what SQL Server in terms of high availability that we got without Windows 2012. So if you look at the traditional ones, like we have database mirroring, which I think you all must be familiar, and a traditional one, log shipping, replication, traditional Windows clustering, as well as always on storage partner solutions, which was there from long time. So this is there even from what is called SQL 2008 onwards. And what we have brought in with the SQL 2012 is the always on and availability groups. So pick up the good features of clustering, mirror, give you a flexibility of going for a configuration where clustering supports the instance level failover, mirroring supports the database level failover, mix and match, give you the best pieces of it with availability groups. This is what available right now with Windows 2008 R2 and SQL 2012. Now, what we are going to see is much more to add to this high availability layer, basically. So from the operating system level, transparent to SQL Server, we are adding additional layers for your failover capabilities. That is what we are going to cover in this session. And current options from the database storage, you have SQL Server sitting there, direct attached storage. You store the database in the disk that are directly attached to your hard disk. That's one of them. Or move on to the SAN storage, either with the fiber or what is called the iSCSI, and then dump the database. This is what available right now. And a new storage option, you have something called scale-out file server. This can be assigned storage or just a bunch of disks through storage spaces, new feature of Windows 2012. And then on the scale-out file server, you're able to dump your files, store your data files, log files for SQL Server using SMB new version. And storing databases on the file server, traditional use of file servers, what do you do normally? You put down your file shares like Word documents, Excel files, anything that you can think of to store the documents and repositories. That's what you do. What are the characteristics? High volume, I/O ratio, mostly full file writes. That means most of the times when you update those files, you're going to update the complete set of the file, not specific part of the file like SQL Server does normally. And then not typically very much I/O bound because one big file I write one chunk. That's what we do normally. Not going to be typically I/O bound. And storing database on the file servers, what happens is we go for a OLTP where we pick up a specific record, update or insert or delete that affects the smaller size of the data and the very small part of the file, not the whole file. And data warehousing scenarios, when it comes to a SQL Server, yes, that do get into your workloads. And that is typically high I/O volume, higher I/O compared to the volume ratio, mostly write in place. That means we touch a specific part of the data file. And then more likely to be I/O bound, depends on the workload that we will be running on. And hotspots, a specific sector or specific part of the data file will be in a hotspot normally in our database world. So that's the difference between traditional use and the database characteristics when it comes to the storage. And next question is, why should you use SMB for storing the databases? Yeah. First question comes to our mind is, why
hotspot? So look, absolutely. I mean, we've got a slide just describing some of this, but you know, all intents and purposes, you stick a workload like a SQL database on a file server. Doesn't matter, you know, what sort of database it is. If there's a lack of connectivity to that file server for some reason, then your SQL database is not in good shape, right? The file handle's lost typically. So, you know, SMB historically has not been the way to do that because we don't have that ability to ensure that you've always got an open handle or that you've always got an open file and that you can work with it. So the enhancements in Server 2012 mean that really it becomes a why not, and we'll go through what they are. It becomes a why not because we solve some of those problems, a lot of those problems. Performance characteristics as well, we get into that side of things and we make sure that you get good performance. So it becomes a why not because the most important point, probably the single most important point to make here about using a file server for SQL, using it for Hyper-V, for argument's sake, to run virtual machines on as well, big block files that need to be open all the time, is that the actual workload, where the workload's running itself, doesn't need to be block attached to storage, doesn't need to be iSCSI or fiber channel attached. So if you think about that scale, that means that from a management perspective, the why not is, well, why not? Because I can centralize all my block storage connectivity to one place, to the scale out file server. Then all my other workloads can run anywhere. I can have a SQL cluster that's pointing across to scale out file server. So I can have many, many of them, and I can limit my requirement for additional zoning, additional fiber channel switches, having to configure them, and you're really taking away that administrative workload and the cost of doing that. So I think we're moving on to the next one there. So as far as the database migration piece is concerned, that example I just gave you means that if I've got a SQL server or a SQL cluster running somewhere, I can take that database off that SQL server, that SQL cluster, and move it to another one. I can then attach it and start that SQL database and run it because ultimately I don't have to worry about reattaching that storage. I just point it at that same location. So it's a simple case of detach, leave it on file share, another server, as long as it's got connectivity via SMB, then I can start that database over there. So just a simple example of, you know, the old world, rezoning, well, the things that you need to have to do, and the new world where we simply go in there and start that database up. So I think we're moving on to Roger.
Yep. Changes to the SQL Server, what it brings up to support the SMB, make it work, mainly formalize support using the SMB file share, remove the trash flag requirement from SQL 2008 R2 onwards. That means even in the current version, if you want to store your database files and log files in the SMB, previously we need to use the trace flag. So that support has been formalized and trace flag requirements has been removed. And integrated scenarios to test infrastructure and labs, they're all in there with the SMB right now with SQL 2008 R2 itself. And 2012 added support for clustering using the SMB file share. So if you are what is called enabling the share clustering on top of the SMB file share, that is supported. And systemdb and SMB file, on SMB file shares is also allowed, like your master, all the 4-5 system databases are possible to get into the SMB file share now. And the root of the installation can now be including the on the share too. You don't need to worry about where it goes into, like what is called the mount points and stuff like that. Significantly improve performance of OLTP workloads. There's a hotfix that if you are looking at R2 that you need to keep in mind and include that. And those are the changes that already exist before Windows 2012.
Yeah, so Roger, this was the section that I was just going to talk to these guys a bit more about how we've gone through with the old world where, you know, failovers, or the world that probably is in existence in most organizations, is where failovers between a file server cluster and a SQL server, you know, in this particular case, SQL server's pointing the share, and you can do this, obviously, but the issue is my cluster should normally give me the ability to do some maintenance on this node without interrupting the workloads, right? Do some maintenance, transfer the workloads across here. However, if I take this offline and the SQL server's talking to this particular node, then IO is interrupted, so you need a maintenance window for that SQL server. Equally, failures, same principle, right? That fails, workload goes offline. So from the point of view of how we get around that, the next one, if you could move along for me there, Roger, where we look at, you know, Hyper-V and SQL over SMB3. Okay, these are some of the features that we're going to talk about today and have a look at today. But fundamentally, this is where the improvements have occurred. So we think about shared storage being attached to file servers, block attached. So we do that configuration work on the file server side of the world. And the file server is Windows Server 2012 in this particular instance, iSCSI or Fibre Channel, whatever you want to do in that space. Then the client up here, the client that's connecting to the file server, needs also to be SMB3, so this next version of SMB, SMB3, to connect to the file server and to get these benefits. So that means that a SQL database would need to be on a Server 2012 instance to get SMB3 capability. Likewise, a Hyper-V server would need to be Hyper-V 2012 to get SMB3 to connect through. If you were to use Server 2008 R2, then you would still get connectivity, you would still get the ability to run on that file share, but you'd be back in previous generation territory from the point of view of maintenance on file server results in disconnection. So just running through a few bits and pieces here, we can store files on the file shares over the SMB3 protocol. For Hyper-V, and same for SQL, we can include everything about it, configuration, all of the HD files, or all the databases. It works for both standalone and clustered servers. So, you know, the file server's clustered, but the point is that the workload, you can cluster and use that as the destination, whether it's Hyper-V or SQL. This increases our flexibility, and I talked about the reduction in OPEX and CAPEX around management maintenance and also configuration and using additional fiber channel switches. The way in which we do it, and I'm not going to spend time going through these because we go through them afterwards, SMB3 implements transparent failover, which gives us continuous availability. Implements SMB scale-out, so we can have multiple nodes in a file server. We can keep on adding multiple nodes to give us that scale-out of capacity and throughput. SMB Direct gives us the ability to go over the wire into memory to actually get high performance. Multi-channel, and we'll go through this again later, multiple channels actually firing away at the same time over Ethernet to get that maximum throughput. Encryption, we can absolutely encrypt over the wire as well, so that communication on SMB can be encrypted. If you want to go over a public network, then you absolutely could do, and you can encrypt. Enabling something called VSS for SMB, very important. We still want to be able to do backups, but VSS over a remote SMB share has not typically been possible. So SMB for VSS, very useful as well. And as per anything else in Server 2012, you've probably seen PowerShell, 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 PowerShell. So, next thing, demo. What's it all about? Oh, we've gone one too far. number 7. So I'm just going to take you through a quick setup around what's in our environment, and then Raj is going to show you how we actually put that database on to FileShare. So I'm on a server called RD01. You can see I've got my been a good boy and having my remote desktop connection manager all set up nicely. So we've got RD01 there, and we've got basically a number of servers that we're managing, lots of different roles that we're managing in here. And I'm just going to go in and show you the file and storage services where I've configured the file cluster to do this work. And just so you're aware, Server Manager obviously gives you this visibility and allows you to manage things remotely. But if I click on manageability, what it's telling me is target name resolution error. I've got an issue with SOFS03. It's because it doesn't exist anymore. So I just wanted to make sure you had visibility of an event. Our environment hopefully is working nicely. But you basically get the ability to just click through to see what's going on in your environment. So what I'm going to do is just go down to failover clustering. And this is failover clustering that you well know. There's nothing particularly changed in the UE massively. I mean, it looks Windows Server 2012-ish. But the functionality is absolutely changed. So you see here, FS Cluster 01. Roles, I've got two roles running. Scale out file server 01, SOFS 01 is the name I've given here, and SOFS 02, scale out file server as well. Both of them currently owned by file server 1, as it happens right at this moment in time. If I go through the nodes, you'll see that I can click onto the nodes, see what's running. I can also look at the disks that are in use. So these disks are iSCSI attached in our demo environment. We don't have a SAN, so I've used an iSCSI target software, iSCSI target in Windows Server, but that's not part of this demo. That's just to show you how it's configured. In the actual roles page here, just to show you how I can configure one of these, you can see this SOFS01 here, this gent has got SQL 2012 created as a share. So that storage that you saw here in disks is mounted into a mount point C:\cluster storage. So this is using cluster shared volumes, which was previously a Hyper-V feature that's been brought through for other applications. So SQL 2012 is the file share. That file share is then available across the board to any application and can be accessed on either one of those nodes. So just to show you how to create one of these roles, these file shares, if I just go right click on roles, configure role, and literally step through this, choose file server, we have a couple of options. One is traditional file server. So this is a file server that will still take advantage of things like transparent failover, but this file server is suited for your general files, right? Word documents, whatever it might be. Okay, those sorts of files that get updated and changed regularly, you know, from the point of view of changing names or creating new files, that's a metadata operation. And a metadata operation is something that doesn't handle well on the scale-out file servers. But obviously, we don't need to worry about that if we're running a big block like a SQL database or a Hyper-V server. So that's where, you know, scale-out file server, the classic file server is great for general use. But scale-out file server is absolutely perfect for what we want to do here for application data. So let me just quickly step through this. I'll go for 4 just in case, because my 3 was my test run. And you can see next. I mean, it really is straightforward. The prerequisite is that you have a pre-configured cluster, but clustering is pretty straightforward to configure as well. So now I've got that. That's a network name, /SOFS04. Now on that network name, I've got a mount point to cluster storage, but there's no shares in there currently. So what I would do is right-click and add a file share. Now that file share, I can choose. What sort of version do I want? Quick, advanced. I want applications here for what I'm attempting to do. I want to create an application that's suitable for Hyper-V databases and so on. Choose my file share that I've just created. Where's the share going to be created? Well, let's go for DBs. Let's go for iSCSI VMs for argument's sake, because there's more space there. Go next, share name, demo 1. And you can see that what we're doing here is creating what the remote path is, and I can change that if I want to. But there you can see the real path to the storage on the server. Now, it's just a mount point, so you don't need to worry about whether there's free space on C. It's just a mount point to that actual volume. So next, tick box is already ticked, enable continuous availability. Importantly, it has to be for an application scale-out file server, so we need continuous availability. Here's your option to enable encrypt data access if you want to, and then you can set your permissions and so on. So simply go create. So now we can browse on the network. Demo one, and off we go. So at that, on that note, what Raj is going to do now is go across into the SQL world and, yep. and have a look at how we might configure that.
So what James has done so far is nothing to do with the SQL Server clustering. It's basically establishing a file share cluster so that when one node fails, that is the file share is hosted for SQL database, the other one transparently takes over. So that's the infrastructure that has been established. Now I'm going to switch over to SQL Server and then going to restore or what is called put a database in the SMB file share. So what do we do? Let me zoom it. Zoom it running?
No.
Okay. So what I'm basically doing is, if you notice here, I'm placing this data file as well as the log file into a highly available storage, SMB share. So just a UNC. That is all you need to specify. There is no other specific configurations or anything. When it comes to the SQL, very much transparent. All you need is the SMB share name so that the database gets refreshed. Sorry, your database gets placed into that share. This takes a couple of.
Are they big files?
Seconds, yep. It's around 2 gig.
2 gig, okay. So behind the scenes, we've got a file copy going on.
Yep. So that's done. So let me refresh. Show you the properties where it is stored. So if you notice here, the path is your SMB file share. So that transparency is you don't need to map the drive, you don't need to worry about looking at drive letters, this, that, everything. So all you need is the SMB file share and paste it.
Cool.
Yep.
Should we move on to this to go through the
yep.
description? Go ahead. Secure in the file system. So I will, we'll look at that when we go back into the demo environment. But ultimately, security is NTFS, security as normal. So literally just managed as normal within Explorer or however you choose to manage
it. From SQL perspective, all you need to ensure is the ID that starts the SQL Server service should have the NTFS permissions back.
Is TDE supported in SMB?
Is what, sorry, say again?
TDE. Yep. Anything that gets into the, I mean, from SQL perspective, you treat it as a direct storage. There's nothing else different. There.
Yeah. And look, that's, sorry, go on.
Yeah, can you migrate existing data to reattach?
You mean move this, what is called the system databases into the SMB file share?
No, just the standard database that you already have set up, and you can actually migrate that to an SMB share.
Yes, that's right, answer is right.
Yeah. And look, I'm going to go through some of the features that enable this, but ultimately, you know, it's simple in as much as, yeah, you've got an existing server. If it's SMB2, you've got to bear in mind that you don't get some of these things if it's a 2008 R2 box, for argument's sake. But if you export that and then just do exactly as Raja did, import it onto another box that is on server 2012, then you get SMB3 capability. So look, I'll step through, and as we go through the next demo, if there's some questions there, then we'll take them. But I just wanted to get through these bits and pieces. So SMB transparent failover. So just describe to you that it's transparent to the application, absolutely. And you can see that that's the case. But that means zero downtime. Now, there is a small I.O. delay during failover, but you guys well know that applications have to deal with I.O. delay from disk I.O. in any case. So we keep within those parameters. So the I.O. delay... you will actually see when we do the demo, you'll see that drop down and come back up again as needed.
When we talk about failover, we talk about file, so failover, not SQL failover.
No, that's right.
Yeah, absolutely. This is away from the SQL, this is back on the file store where that data is living. So the SQL side of things doesn't see anything. I'll show you the event logs that you can see that show that transition of the SMB client. So moving through this, if the clicker's working.
That's getting done. Just to give you the current scenario, what we have shown, from the SQL Server perspective, we don't have a high availability, only for the storage side. So from high availability for the SQL Server, you follow everything what you do with the normal SQL case.
Yeah. So, supports planned and unplanned, so hardware software maintenance, hardware software failures, OS restart, whatever you want to do, load balancing, or as we'll do in the network, in the demo, pull the network devices out of the file server and see what happens then. So, supports all of that sort of stuff. Gives you resiliency for the file and the directory side of things. Now, there are some clever things behind the scenes that we're not going to have time to go into today, but there are other sessions around just the SMB3 part of Server 2012 that go into it, around the fact that there's actually something called a resume key filter. And that resume key means that if there's a transaction in flight, then we are actually capturing that on the file server side. Again, nothing to do from a SQL perspective, but we're capturing that so we ensure that that gets replayed when we go through onto a failover scenario. We require, Server 2012 failover cluster, we require SMB client with SMB3. And I want to make this point. Please don't leave this room thinking that you're going to get this capability with an existing SQL instance on a Server 2008 R2 box, right? You'll get some of the SMB3 capabilities, but you won't get the failover piece. You simply will not get that because the client is SMB2. File shares are configured with continuous availability property so that we ensure that that file share has that handover in place. So, next piece, SMB transparent failure we've just talked about. Next piece, this is your diagram just explaining how that function works. Multi-channel. So we're now using a file share, so we still need performance and throughput, right? So how do we ensure we get performance and throughput when actually we've probably got, you know, a normal kit that we configure, one gig adapter, maybe a gig adapter on another box? Well, this is the same for anything in Server 2012 and same for a Windows 8 client, in as much as the SMB multi-channel capability basically enumerates the routes between the client and the server, or two servers, you're just doing a file copy, it doesn't matter what it is, and uses whatever's available. So we get linear bandwidth scaling. If you've got one NIC, we'll get 1150 megabytes a second. If your storage can obviously throw the data out that quickly. And again, two NICs, and we keep on scaling up. So what you'll see is that we leverage the NIC hardware, and we leverage the capability of SMB3 multi-channel to basically give you massive throughput. So if you've got a file server, you can scale it out by adding more nodes, fine. But the other way you can scale it out is in that individual file server that might have 2 4-gig or 2 8-gig fiber channel adapters going into the back of it. If you have more adapters on the front end of it, without teaming, no teaming required, without teaming, we will just use all of the available bandwidth between the client and the server. So for a SQL database, that means good throughput, right? So, moving on, just an example here. This is an example using InfiniBand. So for 128 kilobyte IOs, 4 threads, 64 outstanding, with RDMA, which is SMB Direct, so this is going over the wire and using remote direct memory access, SMB Direct, we are getting 10,900 megabytes a second, as opposed to local storage. If the disks were directly attached to the box that's running SQL, we get 11,200. So we're talking about within 98% of what you'd get if that same storage was attached locally. So within about 2%. Another scenario, instead of being 128 KBIOs, 8 KBIOs, where you've got lower size IO, but more of them, you look at the differential for IOPS, and we're not looking at much of a difference between IOPS either in this space. Okay, so I would hope that the benefits outweigh the 2% differential on performance that you're looking at in that space. So moving on from SMB Direct, just to give you an example of some of the performance characteristics and capabilities of Windows Server 2012, and in particular Hyper-V as a capability. This is something that I've taken from a session which Jeff Woolsey, who you saw in the plenary, or some of you may have seen in the plenary, gave at TechEd Europe. And what they did is they configured an environment, and I think in the notes we've put the spec, industry standard 4-socket physical server, 80 logical processors, so 10 cores with symmetric multi-threading, so 80 logical processors out of those cores, 256 gigabytes of physical memory, direct attached storage across 5 host bus adapters, LSI host bus adapters, with 40 SSDs spread across those. So we've got some good kit there, of course. But a VM configured with 64 virtual processors, with 64 gigabytes of RAM in that VM. An IOMeter was run, 4K random IO queue depth, QDEPs equals 32, 40 concurrent threads, and you can see some of the differential here. Windows Server 2008 R2, 250,000 IOPS. Windows Server 2012, that configuration, over a million IOPS. Now, that's quite a lot of IOPS, right? And I know it's a technical example that means that we can do it, and perhaps it's not an everyday requirement, but just to give the example of how the performance is possible here. Now, if I was taking that same storage, sharing it over SMB, I would get that same level of throughput within sort of a couple of percent, because I'm going over SMB with that capability. So, just as a placeholder of where we're up to, I think we're going to just talk about scale-out FileServer from now. So these are some of the benefits that we've gone through so far, SQL Server-wise. We're going to go on to talk about scale-out FileServer and actually do some of that demonstration around that. So the scale-out FileServer, what does it actually look like? Well, you saw it in the GUI, but this is what it looks like in real life, so to speak, in as much as you've got your logical file server, and it's a single logical file server. It's just one network name. Behind that network name, there are multiple IPs for each of the individual hosts that are hosting the file server. Then we use something called cluster shared volumes. Cluster shared volumes is a technology of taking an NTFS volume, and we actually do now in Server 2012 rebadge it to CSVFS, but it is an NTFS volume, so if you took a copy of that volume and plugged it into a server, it just is seen as an NTFS server. So your question, sir, about security, it's the same security model. We take that volume and we attach it to all of the hosts. We can then have a file lock opened on one of the files on that cluster shared volumes through a connection to one of these nodes. That file lock prevents anybody else from talking to that file at that point in time, but you get your I/O from your application through this particular node. Now that means that, obviously, as you heard me describe before, that means that that node is the scale point, so you scale that node with multi-channel I/O. Adding more NICs as needed. So key capabilities, scale out file shares, active-active. Every single node is active to the same data, okay? Every node's active to the same data. So if I've got a file server, your application servers, you've got a lot of databases that you want to put on this file share, a lot of different database servers running instances, then you point them all at this, and they'll get allocated one by one across the scale out file server. They'll all have I/O, and they'll all get good throughput. Check this with zero downtime. So big volumes bring with them typically big check disk times. No longer. Server 2012 has got an online check disk which is running constantly to ensure that we know where the issues may exist. As and when we find an issue on that massive CSV volume that's potentially running Hyper-V and SQL and all sorts of database, all sorts of big workloads, we're able to run a check disk online without interrupting I/O to the application. I'll take that statement back slightly, without interrupting I/O noticeably to the application. So we do take the volume offline for up to 15 seconds to do what we call a spot fix. So we go in, imagine it's a big road with traffic running on it. Instead of having roadworks to close the road, we basically go in and just pause the traffic briefly, go and fix that particular spot and then get out of there. So if it takes more than 15 seconds, we stop to resume I/O again. And then we go off and wait 3 minutes and go back and try again. If at some stage we find a file that we can't fix, we mark that file as dirty and the application is notified. So just going through that, there are some other features. I'm not going to go into cluster shared volumes, block cache, but it's a RAM cache that we can use to accelerate I/O. Great for gold images on VHDs, for argument's sake. Simpler management, we've talked about that. I've mentioned it to you, but you're not having to ask for the attached storage or block attached storage. We require Server 2012. An SMB client, and I think I made the point around that before. That said, I'll make another quick point here. If you've got an existing virtual machine running a SQL instance, if you take that virtual machine and run it on top of Hyper-V Server 2012 on a file share, on a scale-out file server, even if that's 2008 R2 running an old version of SQL, it doesn't matter what it is, you're still going to be able to use that scale-out file server because the client that's talking to the file server is the Hyper-V server, not the VM. So that's something that you can look at to leverage that without having to go through too many application changes. Okay, so again, around performance, and this is an important one. Roger and I talked about how to describe this. Essentially, what we're doing here is we're putting one gig Ethernet up against 4 gig FibreGenel, but not from an amount of data that you can transmit in one go from an I/O perspective, from a SQL perspective. So, you know, if you're looking at standard SMB, then the SQL transaction per second that you're looking to get off the configuration we're looking at here is around about 1,175 transactions a second. For SMB 3, and I'll cover that up. It's not supposed to say that. It's supposed to say 3. We're getting basically within 2% of if that disk was directly attached. Okay, so the point here is, and I think I need to explain it a little bit better, is 4 gig fiber channel directly into the host that's running SQL, directly in, so it's using direct attached storage, so therefore you've got 4 gig fiber channel to go through, gets you this, gets you 4,315. If you then make that the file server, make that the file server, take SQL off, run it on a Windows Server 2012 client, talking to that server as a file server over 1 gig Ethernet, not 4 gig, 1 gig Ethernet, and we're getting transactions a second-wise within 2% of that same number as if it was 4 gig fiber channel. Okay, so you see where I'm going there? It's not about throughput of megabytes a second, it's about how many transactions a second we can get. So lastly, on SMB performance, before I go on about that too much, you can use your existing skills to tune the performance, and I think this is one of the ones that we talked about, Roger, that I might hand over to you to talk about before I get out of my depth talking about SQL. But yeah, enabling SQL DBA is to use existing skills, right? So there's no change for these guys.
Exactly. So, I mean, in a traditional scenario now, if you wanted to troubleshoot and fix the performances that are on the, when your database is stored on the same storage, you can think of how many different teams that you wanted to involve, you need to involve, because you don't have a visibility of how the data is physically stored, which disks are participating, what other workloads are running on those disks simultaneously with your workload. So when SQL is not performing well, you need to depend on multiple tiers of organization to get it properly tuned. Whereas when it comes to the SMB, it's all you need to know is Windows.
Yeah.
And so, existing SQL skills.
So, and that's the point here, right? So SMB client counters, they track per share. So you can get a view from a performance counter perspective of your file server. And specifically the share that you got your application running on and all of the data around queue lengths and data bytes per second and all of that sort of good stuff. Equally, I mentioned before the event logs, so there are event logs that are dropped as and when things are moved around. And there's even more stuff we can view there. Because they track per client load, then we can actually rebalance load and we can also diagnose rogue clients so we can investigate and actually move things around. And that's where we want to go next, right? So we're going to go into demo.
And the previous slide, what you have seen, the picture was looking at the SMB client performance perspective, counters to measure. This is on the server side, so you have a flexibility to measure both, pinpoint exactly where that you want it to.
Definitely.
Yep.
Yeah. So I believe we're in demo mode. And Roger, I think you're going to do something
so
like
what I'm going to
start some load, right?
What I'm going to show you is I'm going to trigger some SQL workload.
I'm going to get out of the way.
It's a simple select statement on a very large table with around 20 million rows, and that is going to generate some I/O and continuous execution. And James is going to switch over, show you which file server is being used, because we have two file servers hosting the file share. So it's going to show you which is being used. And then when the query is actively running, it's going to bring down one of them and show you that it is transparently moves to the other file share, other file server, and the query is not failing and still continues to execute.
Yeah.
So let me kickstart this. So basically what I'm doing right now is I'm triggering two queries parallelly. They are executing right now. They are fetching the results. Let me hand over back to James.
Yeah, cool. So Roger started that query, so we got some workload going over to my file server over there. As you saw from what he described before, these databases are living on that SMB file share. So one of the things I can do is look at Task Manager on the server I'm running on here, which is an RD server. It's just a desktop server that we can log into to administer. But we're generating load from SQL Management Studio across. So you can see the load there, 140 megabits a second going across. So now if I move across onto the SQL server itself, here, you'll see that SQL server is sending 16 megabytes a second, so the numbers all look different depending on where you look, but 16 megabytes a second. Here, it's behind the scenes, it's receiving over iSCSI 4 megaseconds, so it's turning that data read into that output at a larger scale. So then if I go across to the file server, and you'll note from here that it's actually file server 1 that's active. You can see FS01 here, it's the one that we're receiving the data from. So if I go across onto FS01, oops, that was 2, FS01, and show you here that we are sending outbound to the SQL server 4 megasecond, then what I actually want to do here to show you what we can do in this environment, and you think about this from an administration perspective, is I want to show you how I can actually balance that load and move that load from one of the file servers to the other file server. Now, with continuous availability, I can just do that online. Right, so in order to do that, I'm going to go to the only place to do things these days. Someone said it. Which is PowerShell, absolutely. So I'll run ISC as an administrator. Now, if you guys haven't seen ISC, it's a step in the right direction, I have to say. And to be honest with you, if there's any people who do development and stuff in the world, they'll be thinking, well, it's about time, I suppose. But it is seriously good for what we need to do. So what we can do here is do get SMB witness client. Now, if I want to pass parameters, I can go minus, and then it will give me a list of parameters. I'm not bothered in this case. Just press return. And what that's doing is it's saying, hey, SQL server, file server, who's talking to you? What sessions have you got? And you can see here, if I do this, file server node FS01 is being talked to by TechEd SQL SMB, the SQL server. It also happens to have an RD connection, which is probably the fact that I've just got a file share open, the file share that I showed you when I was just showing you the share before. So I can identify the client computer. So what I do, and I'll perhaps do it a different way this time, I'll do it over in name here, move, and you can see it counting down to what I want to use. Move SMB witness client. Show details. So wants me to put in client name, wants me to put in destination node. Now I have to be quick when I do this, right, because I want to go over and show you the load moving. But if I go for, let's say, client name, come on, James. It would have been quicker to type if you're that bad with a mouse. And go for FS02. That would make sense, right? We're going to move the workload from FS01 over to FS02 while the server's online. Run that. Yep. And I'll go back to the SQL server. And what you'll see in the SQL server is that FS02 will pick up that load. So you can see there's a transition going on over to FS02, and eventually FS01 will just drop out of that list. So you guys are probably familiar, if you know anything about virtualization, with things like vMotion, live migration, and all that sort of stuff. What I think is quite cool about this is from a storage perspective, we've now got the ability to, regardless of anybody on the application side, you know, they can carry on doing what they're doing. We can move their disk IO from node to node if we want to do maintenance. If we need to identify that this one's under high load and we just want to distribute load, we can do that, right? So that's on its way over. It's nearly moved. So while it's moving, and I'll just go back to RD, and you'll see that we've still got 138 megabits per second running on this box. The SQL query is executing. We haven't got any dodgy messages. And transparent failover is in progress, in essence. So I'll just go back and check that completes, because the next little demo we were going to do, SMB, yep, so now you can see that's it, all I/O is now. All I/O now from the SQL server is to file server 2.
But this is the planned failover, so that everything is online. I wanted to take it for planned maintenance and stuff like that. Now next one, what James is going to show you is the unplanned failover.
I will do. But first of all, is that good? That's good. That is good. That is really good. I like that, because as a Hyper-V guy as well, right, that means if I'm running VMs, I can just move them around from a storage perspective. Now, I'm careful saying that, because obviously there are other ways of moving VRMs around from a storage perspective. I'm talking about the live I.O. The VM's not moving. I'm talking about where the live I.O. goes. The storage isn't moving. Nothing else is moving. It's all on that CSV, that clustered shared volume. But I'm moving where the I.O. is around. And that's really cool. That means I can really start optimizing my data center in that space. So anyway, I do like talking about Hyper-V, as Roger will attest. So let's move on over to this next test, right? So this next test or next example is, well, we've just moved it across to file server 2, this guy here. Now, wouldn't it be a shame if it burnt, if it had its network interfaces removed? So what I'm going to do is go into Hyper-V Manager, find file server 2, and go for settings. And we'll be really nasty, and we'll pull the iSCSI connectivity out and the network out of it at the same time. And again, I'll just have to be quick when I press it to go back so you can see. And I'll make sure I'm on SQL Server here, so you can see what actually happens in this space. So let's just press OK and go back to here. So FSO2. Oh, look, suddenly we're paused on our I/O. And this is just the fact that you can see some I/O supposedly still coming from here is just performance counters. It's just getting up to speed with what's going on.
Yeah, but you can notice on the graph there, the network dropped totally, so it's going to pick it up with the other node.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've got that period of outage, as we described to you before. You do have that. And then resume key filters kick in, I/O is replayed, and we need to do the show, obviously, and go back over to the RD box and see that there's your I/O pause. Of course, you've got I/O pause, but there's your resumption. Query still executing. We didn't know anything about that. Knew nothing about that at all at that point.
From SQL perspective, it still continues to run. No error messages, nothing. The query still keeps executing.
So the last thing to show in that space, I think, I'm just making sure that we remember that all the bits and pieces you're going to show, because there's lots of different angles you can go from, was if you go into Event Viewer, and you can see here, there's some things happening. SMB client is issuing us some warnings at around about 10:30. Oh, maybe that was when somebody started playing with network adapters. So connection to FSO1 IP address was aborted. And you go through this, and you can see all these different event logs. Session was lost. And you go through. Connection to share was lost. Connection was reestablished. Basically, we're back online. So you can track all that. It's all tracked. Everything's there in play. And you can find the migration one there where there's a graceful handover as well. So, on that note, Roger, I mean, we're obviously in the demo environment, but I think we probably should go back to the slides and just describe a bit more about how that's actually possible. So if I move on to this one. So I mentioned before distributed network name. Very important. Distributed network name is in DNS, and it requires dynamic DNS. Fortunately, ADDNS is dynamic. So that scale-out file server with all those nodes under the hood creates a distributed network name, SOFSO1, as we had before, and behind that name is every single IP for the scale-out file servers in that cluster. When somebody comes to actually talk to that file server, they basically get back the address, they get back an individual address for that particular node. The next person that comes gets the next one. So it is round robin, but it's just a distribution mechanism, right? You just need to get things distributed. After that, you can obviously move things around if you need to. The other thing that I should mention in this space is, as well, is that unlike a traditional cluster, there isn't a central IP that is the IP that you all connect to. That's not the way we work. You don't go through a central IP. Like, again, it's through these distributed network names.
And when you speak about the round robin, mainly you need to think about I have 2 or 3 or 4 or 5, 6. File server clusters that is hosting the same share. It's not that we are wasting the resource. They can be active. I have 10 different SQL servers storing the database files on those file share. They will be getting served by different file servers. So it is resource utilization-wise, they're all well taken care.
Cool. So the distributed network name is a key piece for that as well. If you're not doing dynamic DNS, you have to go manually update whatever DNS entry you're using. Most of you are probably using AD. If you're not, then you have to go manually update that record. So client redirection, how does that work? So client redirection was what we just showed. And client redirection has something that's named something that you might be familiar with. And it's not that. So it's the same word used for something else. Okay. So anyway, we're going to have to sort of cope with that. You remember that command I ran, which was... I'm going ahead of myself. That command was get SMB witness client. It was move SMB witness client. So what we're doing is we're saying in that two-node cluster, I'm connected to one node active, and my I/O is going through that one node. My witness for that I/O is the other node. in a 3-node cluster, a 4-node cluster, you know, you only need one witness, but my witness for that IO. So that's the witness is the thing that basically says, if that box dies, like someone takes the network cards out, I've got a witness to step in before normal SMB timeouts occur to say, right, change your IO across. So that's how we get around that piece of not going too far on the gap when your IO is paused, right? SMB clients are not really distributed automatically. Well, they're not, but there's no reason you couldn't. If you guys have heard of System Center Orchestrator, then PowerShell, you could quite easily say, get me this performance counter, see where we're up to, and do a move SMB witness client and move things around if you wanted to. That's not going to be difficult to achieve at all. So just stepping through this, this basically just goes through showing you that process that we went through, and I just wanted to make sure that you guys are aware of how it does that. And there's a little example in the deck so that when you download it, because you want to go and do this straight away, you've got access to that. Okay, so Roger.
Yep. And adding to the previous slide, the witness client comes handy. For example, you are creating a database. That means you are even adding a file to the in the SMB file share. During that time, if the file server that is hosting that share, which you are connected to, fails, and the witness knows each and every command that gets in, it gets synchronized. So witness knows exactly and then transfer to the other file server, transparently get the things done without even noticing any error message back to the SQL client. In review, what you have seen so far, SQL database on SMB file shares fully supported and enhanced, and the performance-wise, they are almost on par with the direct storage with less than 2% of overhead. And it's highly available from SQL perspective. All we need to know is we are going to store the files, data files, and log files back in the SMB file share. That's all we need to know. And all others are taken care by the underlying Windows infrastructure and storage. And performance-wise, as we said, 2% overhead, that's what we are looking at. Reduce SQL Server solution complexity, because I don't need to worry about, when I set up a SQL cluster especially, I don't need to worry about whether I'm presenting the right volume, am I mounting the LUNs, am I switching over, releasing the logs, moving that, moving this. All those complexities removed. All we need is just SMB share, store the files there. So that's the major recap that we'd like to do. And
yeah, cool. James? Yeah, absolutely. So look, and that's a recap of what we went through. My little bit here, and I've been talking about it anyway, but my little bit here, no, you don't leave, this is the good.
He can't stop without that, sorry.
Sorry, please be nice to me in the email. Sorry, I shouldn't have done that. That was a bit naughty. Everybody else, please be nice as well. I don't normally do that. So Hyper-V enhancements for SQL Server, what have we got? What have we got in the box? So Hyper-V enhancements, let's start with scale. Let's look at what Hyper-V was, what it is now. Physical processor support. Physical processor in a physical server that's going to run Hyper-V. Up to 8 processors or 8 sockets in a physical box with Hyper-V 4. And then you could create a VM with up to 4 vCPUs. As you saw from my description earlier, we can now go up to 64 processors. Very important, 64 processors. Very important to note that that is linear scalability. So we're not talking about a case of you go from 1 to 2 to 3 to 4 to 5 to 6 to 7 processors, and as you go up and up and up, whilst you can get more throughput when there's threads available, you have to wait for them. That's not what we're talking about. We have a different scheduling engine in Hyper-V than some others. And fundamentally, what we're saying is when you get up to 64, we go to schedule 64 transactions all at once, for example, because we've got a really high load SQL Server on there. And we don't have to wait for 64 on the host. We just execute them where there's a core available. We don't have to wait for 64 to be available all at the same time. And that's really important. You know, Jeff Woolsey famously talks about the fact that, well, famously to me anyway, talks about the fact that, you know, ultimately, if you're going to add more features into your hypervisor and make it bigger and better, it's no good if you actually start using them and you actually end up getting less performance, or you can't use live migration, or you can't do X, Y, and Z. Next thing, 1 terabyte of memory per VM. Now, hosts with 1 terabyte of memory are very expensive, of course. Hosts with 4 terabytes of memory, which we do support, so up to 4 terabytes in a physical server, are even more expensive. But either way, you can configure up to 1 terabyte of memory per VM if you want to. So that's a big SQL server. Live migration and high availability, yes. Live storage migration, yes. Let's bring that one in. So live storage migration is awesome. We talked before about moving the I/O. Now, there should be a really shiny brand name for what we just did, but it's Move SMB Witness Client. Anyway, but we can do, separately to that, we can do live storage migration, where we're physically moving the storage from one volume to another volume. Doesn't matter whether that volume is on a USB, on block storage, on a file share, it doesn't make any difference, right? As long as we can see it, we can move it from A to B.
And that's without downtime.
Without downtime, absolutely, live. Next one, if you can do that, and you can also do live storage migration, sorry, normal live migration, moving the memory state of a VM from one host to another, well, why don't you just join the two together? I bet there's a few of you in the room who've seen someone standing at the front of the stage with a piece of network cable going like that. No? Okay. Well, that demo is Jeff Woolsey on stage going, we migrate a virtual machine in its entirety, memory state, all the storage and everything from one physical server to another online. So there's no requirement whatsoever for any downtime to move that VM all the way across. Now, you may think, well, I thought you could do that with other technologies, and you absolutely can't, right? If you've got other technologies in place, this is the only place you can do exactly that. There are no dependencies apart from that network cable to connect the two VMs. And in fact, one of the demos we do is actually taking a laptop and a slate to a site and doing it over Wi-Fi. And you can technically do it over Wi-Fi as well. I mean, you need a small VM, so we use Mini XP, but, you know, just because otherwise we'd be there in a demo for quite a while. So for SQL specifically, I think there's a few bits and pieces that are useful on there. We've talked a lot around VMs on file-based storage. There's some bits that aren't on there, and I didn't talk to you about storage spaces. There's other sessions on all that stuff. So what we're going to do now is talk about the thing that's not on this slide, I don't think. Oh, and they're customer-driven, these features. You've heard that. You heard that before. What we're going to do is talk about something else, which is Hyper-V replica. And this is important because it doesn't matter what workload it is, but if it is SQL, great. It doesn't matter what workload it is. We replicate from one VM host to another host, online, live. We talk to the application. It knows we're doing it. We tell it to quiesce its rights when we do the snapshot on the move. When we do the replication. And we do it every 5 minutes. So if anybody's got any experience of Data Protection Manager, which is a Microsoft backup product, you may or may not, and you probably use other things as well. But the point is that Data Protection Manager heavily uses VSS, the Volume Shadow Copy Service, to do its work. And one of the architects from that team is involved in actually the design of the Hyper-V replica functionality now within Hyper-V Server and Windows Server. And what it enables us to do is configure a replication of a VM from one host to another. And that replication kicks off initially, does a replica, and then every 5 minutes after that sends the differentials across. So without further ado, I think what we'll do is actually jump in there and actually show that.
Yep.
So
when James is switching over, just wanted to highlight that Hyper-V replica scenario. If you're in a DR environment for SQL Server, you need to replicate your database from your primary site to the secondary site. You need to rely on either SAN replication or other technologies and what is called a look at it from a various management perspective. I need a duct fiber, et cetera, as well as when primary site goes up, bringing up the secondary site is another set of tasks or process that you need to follow. So with the Hyper-V replica, now all you need to do is just right-click on the Hyper-V, enable the replica. It keeps getting replicated on the other side. When you need, just fire it. So you're moving away from all other complications. Simplified environment. Yep.
So the SQL server that Raja was importing that database to and we were doing the queries against is actually replicated from one host to the other, just the two hosts that I was showing you before. So I right click and go to replication, view replication health. You can see that from the 13th of the 9th, 2012 at 9 p.m. until the 14th of the 9th, 10:43. The average size has been 16 meg, maximum size 132 meg, probably when we were doing some queries and so on. Errors encountered, we have had some, so we can view those if we want to. But you can see the health state, and we've not made any changes to this. It catches up accordingly. Successful replication cycles, 165 of 165. And what's this? Size of data yet to be replicated, 8 KB. So if we lost that primary one right now, you would see 8 KB of data loss on the destination, right? whatever that 8 KB might be. It's gone. You're not getting it back. So clearly there are certain workloads that that's not suitable for. So I don't know, why don't we look at using some of the application features that you have in SQL? Absolutely. So how do we configure that? Let me just show you. So we will go across to our other host and choose RDO1. That might be a good one to do. Yeah, replication not configured. Right click, enable replication. We go through a pretty much next process. But I want to go through this because I want to describe to you guys some of the features in a bit more detail just to show you that it is pretty damn easy to do. So, chosen the destination, which is the other host. Now, we're in domain here, so we can use Kerberos authentication, and we're not going to encrypt the data. We're just going to transmit it across. If you want to, and you configure certificates, you can go over the WAN, you can go from domain to non-domain, you can go wherever you want to go with this, but you can use certificates for that piece. We compress the data that's transmitted over the network. Puts load on the host, but it's a trade-off, right? How much data you're sending. Next, do we want to replicate all the VHDs? So on a SQL server, Roger, there's sometimes a backup volume, I guess. Something like that. And you probably wouldn't bother taking that across. Equally, you might split your page file out. Who knows? If you only care about the data that's on one of the volumes, admittedly, the OS is probably important too, then take that over, but don't take everything. Now, you know, I'll take it in this case. Now, this is the important bit, and I mentioned Data Protection Manager before. This is where we're talking about the latest recovery point will be stored at the destination, just the latest one. If I click here, additional recovery points, we can choose that we actually have the last four, in this case, five-minute replicas available to us to restore to as well, kept in the form of snapshots. Okay? We can up that, we can keep on going, and you can see as we do, the data size increases. Okay? See how that data size is changing? Because we've got more data to keep. This piece here, Roger, are you going to...
Yep. What it does is basically when it triggers the VSS, it issues a checkpoint on the database, and then it ensures that it's a consistent state. Then it starts moving to the replication. Once it's replicated, for example, you have four recovery points in this case. So all four are consistent recovery points. So for some reason, the last one that you are not able to recover it, you have an option to go back. So what basically they are doing is they include a snapshot of everything. That's why the size keeps going up. But does not mean that I can't recover the last one. So every one of them is recoverable. Checkpoints have been issued, and then consistent state has been ensured, and then it moves it.
So I'm just going to click on any of the latest recovery point. Next, briefly on this point, size of the initial copy of the selected virtual hard disks, and I've chosen a really bad VM for this because I don't think we've got space on the destination for that, but we'll find out. Hey, it's the end of the demo. It's the end of everything, but if it goes wrong like that. Send initial copy over the network. We've got 1 gig NICs here, and we've also got multi-channel, so we can throw that across pretty damn quickly, so we'll soon know if we're running out of space. Send initial copy using external media. Yes, absolutely. Browse, choose the external media. It'll replicate to there. You take it, plug it in, copy it across, off you go. Fine. The last one is a pretty cool one. You've got a SQL server. Example, you've got a SQL server running 2008 R2, just as an example. It's got your SQL database installed in it, but it's your gold image of SQL 2008 R2, and your database is only 200 meg, for argument's sake. Maybe it's a gig. What we do is we pre-stage using that same gold image at the destination, a VM, and we say, use that VM as the one you're going to replicate over, and we replicate all the changes between those two VMs. So we don't have to send all the data across. Great for WAN sites and things like that.
Especially if you have a standard environment of spinning off new SQL servers based on the basic disk, or what is called the master gold disk, keep that on the other side, only the indifferential stuff is moved.
Replication schedule, pretty straightforward. Now, yes, fine, thank you, or another time. Next, and finish. And it will start sending it. And you'll probably see, well, you can see multi-channel I.O. actually evaluates whether or not it's a good idea to send data across other links at this point in time. And at this moment in time, it's just sending it all over one. It may well balance out. It depends, right? If we've got other traffic going on, then it won't. So we've probably got that SQL I.O. query still running, so it's saving bandwidth. You can configure all that stuff as well. So, yeah, that may or may not actually make it across. Let's see. But I think we're pretty much coming to... yeah, you can see my V drive's only got 94 gigs, so we're only going to get so far with that replica. So, Roger, was I going to go through much more on that particular demo? I don't think I was. I think we'll probably switch back over and conclude on the Hyper-V piece. Easy setup. I think you'd probably agree that's pretty easy to set up, and there's PowerShell for it too. Oh, yeah, of course, there's PowerShell for it too. Works with your current hardware. You just need AMD V or Intel VT on the processor in there, and it's been around, what, six years or so. So anything knocking around should do, or you know, obviously brand new stuff. Two connected servers in Windows Server 2012. No guest dependencies. Critical. Could use a Linux box. Could be anything, right? It's totally outside of the guest itself. The only bit that was inside the guest was where we send the VSS quies command through. So, wrapping up.
Yep.
Roger.
So the quick two points that I wanted to re-emphasize is that one of them is SMB multi-channel. And in the SAN scenario, or fiber optic scenario, if you wanted to, fiber channel scenario, if you want to increase your throughput, you need to get additional HBA card, connectivity, cost, etc. Here we are talking about adding additional industry standard NIC, configure an IP. That's all you need to do. All others are transparent and taken over.
Do you want that one?
Yeah, please.
There you go.
So that's something that I want to reemphasize. And coming back to the HA options, that's where we all started with. As I mentioned earlier, with availability groups and standard mirroring, lock shipping, clustering, etc., now we are adding additional layer of high availability with the what is called the continuously available SMB file shares and Hyper-V replica for your disaster recovery, or even within the site if you wanted to keep a copy of it for failover scenarios, as well as live migration across the shared nothing architecture. That means from one data center to another data center in different location where your Hyper-V hosts are in a different subnet, you are able to fire the Hyper-V image with the same IP address on the other side without making any much changes on the application side. So those are the major summary or wrap-up that I would like to do. And then let's open up for the Q&A. Yep.
Evals, please. And Q&A, yep. Can you replicate to more than one target? You can buy per VM, yes. So you per VM basis go out to one, but per VM it's just to one. So a different VM can go to a different target. Thanks, guys. Evals, please. Thank you very much, everybody.
Yep. Thank you.
And we'll be around for a Q&A for a little while we're closing things down, or down at the data center stand in the center of the expo hall, or SQL.
As soon as speaker lounge.